Chapter 21 of 2 Samuel, first verse. And there was a famine in the days of David for 3 years, year after year. And David inquired of the Lord, and the Lord answered, "It is for Saul and for his bloody house, because he slew the Gibeonites." And the king called the Gibeonites and said to them, "Now the Gibeonites were not of the children of Israel, but of the remnant of the Amorites. And the children of Israel had sworn unto them, and Saul sought to slay them in his zeal to the children of Israel and Judah. Wherefore David said to the Gibeonites, 'What shall I do for you, and wherewith shall I make the atonement, that you may bless the inheritance of the Lord?' And the Gibeonites said unto him, We will have no silver nor gold of Saul nor of his house, and neither for us shall thou kill any Israel.' And he said, What you shall say, that will I do for you." And they answered the king and the man that consumed us and that devised against us that we should be destroyed from remaining in any of the coasts of Israel, "Let 7 men of his sons be delivered to us, and we will hang them up to the Lord in Gibeah of Saul, whom the Lord did choose." And the king said, "I will give them." And the king spared Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, because the Lord's oath that was between them, between David and Jonathan, the son of Saul. But the king took the 2 sons of Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah, whom she bare unto Saul, Armoni, I guess that's what it is, and Mephibosheth, and the 5 sons of Michael, the daughter of Saul, whom she brought up for Adriel, the son of Barzillai, and Mahoathite. And he delivered them into the hands of the Gibeonites, and they hanged them in the hill before the Lord. And they fell all 7 together, and were put to death in the days of the harvest, in the first days, in the beginning of barley harvest. And Rizpah, the daughter of Ai, took sackcloth and spread it for her upon the rock from the beginning of harvest until water dropped upon them out of heaven, and suffered neither the birds of the air to rest upon them by day, nor the beasts of the field by night. And it was told David that Rizpah, the daughter of Ai, the concubine of Saul, had done. And David went and took the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan his son from the men of Jabesh Gilead, which had stolen them from the streets of Bethshan, where the Philistines had hanged them, when the Philistines had slain Saul in Gilboa. And he brought up from thence the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan his son, and they gathered the bones of them that were hanged. And the bones of Saul and Jonathan his son were buried. Verse 14. The bones of Saul and Jonathan that his son buried, they in the country of Benjamin in Zelah, in the sepulcher of Kish's father, and they performed all that the king commanded. And after that, God was entreated for the land. Moreover, the Philistines had yet war with Israel, and David went down, his servants with him, and fought against the Philistines, and David waxed faint. And Ishbi-nob, which was one of the sons of the giant, the weight of whose spear weighed 300 shekels of brass in weight, he being girded with a new sword, thought to have slain David. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, succored him, and smote the Philistine and killed him. Then the men of David sware unto him, saying, "You shall no more go out with us to battle, that you quench not the light of Israel." And it came to pass after this that there was again battle with the Philistines in Gob. Sibbekai, the Hushite, slew Saph, which was of the sons of the giant. And there was again a battle in Gob with the Philistines, where Elhanan, the son of Jaareoregim, something like that, a Bethlehemite, slew the brother of Goliath, a Gittite, the staff of whose spear was like a weaver's beam. And there was yet a battle in Gath, and there was a man of great stature, that on every hand had 6 fingers, and on every foot 6 toes, 24 in number, and he also was born to the giant. And when he defiled Israel, Jonathan the son of Shimei, the brother of David, slew him. These 4 were born to the giant in Gath, and fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. There's a mouthful in that, isn't there? just read it. Do you remember when David slew Goliath? He went to a creek and did what? He picked up five stones. And right there's your answer. Why did he pick up five stones? He killed Goliath with one, and he had four stones, one for each of the brothers. Now, if you think that was arrogant, you can think what you want, but the boy knew what he had to have, didn't he? He drew upon the rock, didn't he? He picked up the rock, and in the rock there was five pieces there. That's grace and mercy that he put in there. And grace and mercy is to kill the giant in your land. It was death to them. There was five wounds in Christ's body. It could represent death. But anyway, that takes care of that piece of it. Let's go back to where we was at. Chapter 21, verse 1 again. And there was a famine in the days of David 3 years, year after year. That means three continual years. Now, it didn't say 3 whole years. It said 3 years. And when it says 3 years, it's not necessarily talking about 3 continual years. I'm going to show you something. I'll draw it on the board here. I'm going to draw a graph, just a line. And if I divide it in 3 sections, okay? Now, if this was the beginning of the year, curve here to the left, and any time in this year, if you started there, that would be part of that year, wouldn't it? Then you got all the middle year, and it could be anywhere in here, anywhere out through here could be part of that year. And that's the way the Jewish people taught. When they used a year, if it was part of this one, part of this one, part of this one, they didn't say, what was a year and a piece of a year, two pieces put together make another piece. They still called that 3 years. Do you understand where the thinking is? That's the way they said 3 years. So it's not necessarily 3 complete full years, just like it wasn't 3 complete days when Jesus resurrected. He was in part of one day, a full day, and part of another day. Okay? Okay. There was famine for 3 years in the land. Okay? Now, if you realize this is not a physical thing he's talking about, it was a natural pattern that was set up to teach you what? A spiritual truth. There is a famine in the land for 3 years. 3 days. 3 realms. Passover. Pentecost. Tabernacle. Somewhere in that third realm, you're going to lighten a ship with your own hands, and you're going to learn how to start feeding yourself. Okay? So sometime in that third day is when we're going to start feeding ourselves. That third year that they're talking about here. Go ahead. You start seeking.
Right.
You know, famine will make you seek for something to eat, won't it? And David did what? He sought the Lord. And the Lord answered. See, you want an answer, where are you going to get it? You don't go to the local corner church to find the answer. The answer is in who? It's in the Father. It's in Christ. It's within yourself. I'm not talking about New Age here. I'm talking about seeking the Christ that dwells within you. It's within every human being. You want the answer. The answer is already in you. If He dwells in your heart, guess where the answer is? It's in your heart. But you've got to seek this thing. It's not like you're going to do surgery and open this heart up and look and see if you can find something laying in there. It's talking about your thinking process. The only way you can seek the Lord is in your thinking process, in your very center of your being. And the only way you can do that is filter out all this dust and sand that has been thrown on us by humanity. All this religious stuff. You've got to find out, is that what the book said? If it isn't, guess what you do with it? You cast it out because that's some of the dust and the sand that's clouding the water. The water's not clear. It's not pure whenever you're doing this. Things are stirred up. But when you come to this one realm, when you come to that third year, third day, you're going to come to a place when you're going to start to truly seek God. In the first 2 realms, tell me who you're seeking. Self. You're seeking the approval of a man or a woman. I can give you all the approval you want, but it won't do you any good. You want to find approval, you find it in your Father, in yourself. True or false? If you can't come to a place of stability in your life where you know who you are, anybody's going to knock you off your foundation. because your foundation is still in the sand. Once you stand upon that rock within you, can anybody take you out of it? No. Nobody can take you out of it. Why do you think Jesus could stand even when the whole world had turned against him? Why do you think he could stand? He knew the purpose of the Father. He knew his will. He knew who he was. He knew everything he needed to know. And where did he draw from it? From within himself. He didn't draw from a group of people, did he? His disciples all bailed out on him. Everybody bailed out on him. See, there's the one you have to realize. But you always have a brother. You got a friend that's closer than a brother. He's always there. And the Lord answered him, he said, it's for Saul and for his bloody house because he slew the Gibeonites. Okay? And when it says David inquired of the Lord, you know what it really says? It said he sought the face of the Lord, the identity of the Lord. And when you find the identity of the Lord, guess what you're going to find in it? You're going to find yourself. See, this is not an external message. It's an internal message of stability and confidence and boldness to be able to be who you are regardless of what anybody thinks about you. See, that's not the issue. The issue is I have to find out who I am. When I find out who I am and what authority is in me, I don't have to worry about anything, do I? I don't have to worry about how will I pay my bills, how will I eat next week. Well, something might happen. So what? I didn't start this thing, did I? Then guess what? I'm surely not going to finish it. I might be there to finish, but I'm not going to be the one finishing it, am I? And I will be there to finish. I'll make that statement now. I'll be there at the end, see? I know I will. Because he slew the Gibeonites. And the king called the Gibeonites, the remnant of them. Do you remember when Saul was set as king and he was told to go in this city and kill everything? And he didn't do it? But he kept some for reward and he let a few of them slip here and there. I'm sure he didn't get them all. Obviously, Scripture said he didn't. And David's calling some of them back up now, and Saul's dead, and there's still some Gibeonites around, and them ites in the land. We know what ites are. Okay? And for his own purpose, he tried to outthink God, and it didn't work, caused problems. But the king, David, called the Gibeonites and said to them, now the Gibeonites were not of the children of Israel, but the remnant of the Amorites. We know the Amorites are what?
Pride.
Am I right? Little play on words there. And the children of Israel had sworn, made a covenant with them, and Saul sought to slay them in his zeal to the children of Israel and Judah. That's called religious zeal. God told him to slay them once before and he didn't. So he got punished, so now he's going to go back and try to make up for it. God didn't tell him to, did he? He's going back. After the children of Israel had made a covenant with these people, now Saul comes back and wants to slay them. That's religious zeal. And you know, I've heard people say more than once, you need to do something even if it's wrong. You don't need to be sitting around. Well, you know what? Why do something that's wrong if you know you've got to correct it when you get done? If you do the wrong thing, you're going to reap from the things that you did. If God doesn't tell you to do it, why should you do it? Now, God doesn't have to tell me if I want to take a day and go fishing or hang out with some of my friends or something. God doesn't have to tell me to go do that. When he don't have anything on the agenda, what does that mean to me? I'm free to do something that I desire to do. Not go crazy. I'm not talking about that. But I mean, if I have something I enjoy doing, if I want to sit around and talk to my friends or something, or fellowship with them, to share the word, whatever, that's okay. But if I have something on the agenda, then I've got to do it. So you don't have to volunteer for God. God knows what he wants, when he wants, and he'll have you in the position to do what he wants at the very time he needs it. You don't have to worry about that. He's the captain. He's got everything figured out. Verse 3, therefore, David said to the Gibeonites, what shall I do for you? And not to you, but for you. And wherefore shall I make the atonement that you may bless the inheritance of the Lord? This word atonement, do you realize what that word is? It's the word kafar. It's the same word that Noah used when he said he pitched the inside of the ark and the outside of the ark. It's the same word used for reconciliation. Imagine that. How can I reconcile these things, he's saying, okay, rather than make atonement? How can I reconcile these things that you may bless the inheritance of the Lord? The inheritance of the Lord is not a piece of dirt, is it? He's not blessing a nation called Israel. The inheritance of the Lord is his sons and daughters, his first fruit. And the Gibeonites said to him, "We will have no silver nor gold of Saul." Saul speaks of the old religious order under the law, correct? So what are they saying when we say we don't want no silver and gold? We don't want to hear about the old religious type of salvation or deliverance that they're talking about, this redemption. We don't want silver as redemption. We don't want that old-fashioned stuff, see? We don't want that old view of God. Okay, you hear what I'm saying? He said, we don't want that message. We want, straight up, we want the sacrifice. We want the real thing. He said, we don't want anything of the silver and gold of Saul or from his house or his family. It's all corruptible. They're saying, we want the real deal. We don't want this man's idea. And I have to say, amen to that. I have to say amen to that. Neither for us shalt you kill any man in Israel. They didn't ask for anybody to die, did they? Not yet, anyway. And he said, what shall we say? And he said, what you shall say will I do for you. And they answered the king, the man that consumed us and that devised against us, that we should be destroyed from remaining in any of the coasts of Israel, let 7 men of his sons be delivered to us, and we will hang them up unto the Lord. What does 7 represent? Completeness, what else? Perfection. Well, it's also a covenant. See, Shaba is the word for 7. S-H-A-B-A, Shaba. You know what it means? To 7 oneself. That's a covenant. See? Whenever he swore by himself, he made a covenant. So 7 also represents covenant. So they were wanting a new covenant. Now, the book clearly tells you that no covenant is set without the shedding of blood, true or false. So he said, give us 7 men from Saul. Give us the sacrifice of the old order. He didn't ask that all of them be killed. He just said, give us 7 to shed the blood as a covenant. You hear what I'm saying? So they were setting a new covenant with God. And we will hang them up to the Lord in Gibeah of Saul, whom the Lord did choose. Now, God chose Saul, but Saul was still not perfected, was he? Rough order. Now, this word hanging up, do you know what it means? The word actually means exterminating the idler. Excuse me, I read it wrong. Nope, don't even go there. It means to execute slowly, to impale or expose, to drop to pieces by rotting. So what the
word hanging up?
Yes, those words hang up in the Hebrew language here mean to die by hanging up, to be impaled, and to hang there until the flesh dropped off in pieces as it rotted. That's a gross thought, isn't it? To hang a human body up and let it rot. But there's a purpose here. Let me go on through it. That's what that word means. And the king said, I will give. But the king spared Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, because of what? Because of the covenant he'd made with Jonathan. The oath or the covenant. What do you think them 7 people being hung up at this place, and the place that they hung them up was the place that Saul was wont to live? Okay? So what do you think the message was in the natural to the family of Saul when those 7 sons were hung up and rotted for months? Well, it's saying a lot like that, but it's also in their face too, isn't it? They saw that the old order did nothing but bring what?
Death.
That was the message to them. It's dying, it's rotting, and just like Paul said in Hebrews, guess what? The old order is passing away. If the old don't pass away, then why would there be talking of a new one if the old one wasn't going to pass away? So it's just a process. Okay, and the king took the two sons of Rizpah, the daughter of Amariah, whom she bore into Saul, Armoni and Mephibosheth, and the five sons of Michael, the daughter of Saul, whom she brought up for Adriel, the son of Barzillai, the Meholathite. What does all that mean? Rizpah. It's a hot stone or a pavement stone. The daughter of Uriah, the screamer, the hawk, literally woe, screaming because of the pain that they were going to bear. A-I-A-H, yeah, Aya, screamer, or woe. Another definition in there is the word hawk, like you know how a hawk screams when they're up in the air, circling something. Whom she bare into Saul, Armoni, which means a palace or a fortress, and Mephibosheth, and the five sons of Michael. Michael speaks of what? It's kind of one like God, but if you look at the root of this, it talks of a small stream, or they call it a revlet. You know, just where it's starting to run, it's just a small bit of the word, I guess, a small bit of water. The daughter of Saul, whom she brought up for Adriel, the flock of God, the son of Barzillai, which is iron-hearted, the Meholathite, and the Meholathite speaks of dancing. Okay? May have been. I can't remember now. May have been the right one. There's so many of these names. Some of them, they're similar that it's hard to separate all of them. Adriel is the flock of God. And he delivered them into the hands of the Gibeonites, and they hanged them. That's the same as the word I told you before. To execute slowly, to impale, or to expose, or to drop to pieces by rotting. They hanged them up in the hill before the Lord, and they fell, all seven together. That means they hung. And it wasn't talking about them necessarily dying when they fell. It means they began to rot and drop and just all fall in a big conglomeration at the bottom. And were put to death in the days of harvest, in the beginning of barley harvest. In the first of the barley harvest. What does that tell me? In the first of the barley harvest. Now, I got back up a minute. How many sons were sacrificed? Seven. Now, question. How many ites were in the land in Deuteronomy 7, verse 1? Seven, right? Now there's seven sons here being sacrificed, right? How many demons were cast out of Mary Magdalene? Do you see a pattern flowing through here? What are we talking about? There's seven things we need delivered from. That's not a literal number. We know that. We need to have a covenant with God. And a covenant with God, guess what it'll do? It'll drive out the seven spirits. It'll drive out those seven ites out of the land. That dead flesh has to fall away. Do you hear what I'm saying? Now, since we got these ites out of the way, we find out when it's going to take place. And God will tell you when that seven's going to come in your life. When is your ites going to be out of the land? He said they began to be hung up in the beginning of barley harvest. Well, guess what? Barley speaks of one thing. Pentecost. Oh, I forgot the T, didn't I? Pentecost. Barley harvest speaks of Pentecost. So in the beginning of Pentecost, guess what's going to happen? You're going to start to deal with your ites. But that's not total salvation. That's not total deliverance, is it? That's not coming till tabernacles. In the third day, guess what? Your ship will be lightened. Jesus was perfected in the third day. You'll be perfected in the third day. In the beginning of Pentecost, there's where you're going to start to get your deliverance. But see, most people sit down right there. They think that's it. We have arrived. We've come to Pentecost. No, there's another feast called Tabernacles. And you still got to go through Pentecost to get there, to the harvest. Now, when was the beginning of the barley harvest? Huh? Yeah, there's something that's one thing. But I'm looking in the natural. When, what time of year did the barley harvest come in? Barley come in earlier. Barley come in the springtime. Right. So it was somewhere in the spring that these people were hung up. Okay? And they stayed there until when? Look at the next verse. And Rizpah, the daughter of Ai, took sackcloth and spread it for her upon the rock from the beginning of harvest until water dropped upon them out of the heaven, and suffered neither the birds of the air to rest on them by day, nor the beasts of the field by night. Till the rains. The rains come in the fall. The fall of the year. After the harvest, the rainy season comes in. September, October. We get a rainy season, don't we? Same over there. So we're talking about a period of a lot of months here, aren't we? That they were hanging up. And it says that Rizpah, the daughter of Ai, took the sackcloth, that's humility, and spread it for herself upon the what? Now, you know, we want to talk of sackcloth as being humility, but this isn't really why she spread it here. Do you know why she spread it there? Nope. She spread it upon the rock. Now, I'm going to tell you something. She wasn't up on top of the cliff where they hung them. Where was she at? Down here. You can't protect their bodies when they've rotted and dropped to the ground by being up there where they've hung, can you? They went to the lowest part. And she laid this sackcloth down there to sleep upon. Sackcloth was also used as a form of a cloth to sleep upon. So she's laying here sleeping with this rotting flesh, her sons. But guess what? It was flesh. And see, that tells you what the soul will do. They will try to honor and respect the flesh that's died and went to the grave. And, oh God, could I run off on that one? And I'll leave that alone. Once we die, the spirit's gone. That flesh is nothing more than dust. It's dust. It has maybe hasn't fully returned there yet, but it's gone too, isn't it? And see, that's where the embalming came from the Egyptians and all that stuff. And I'm not getting in that one. I'd be here all day. So anyway, I heard a man one time talk about this Rizpah being the daughter of Ai. She was doing so good, chasing away some righteous thing. All she was doing, that's the soul trying to hang on to the flesh. It's already got a destiny. The flesh has a destiny to go back to the dust. Solomon told us that in Ecclesiastes 12, verse 3 or 4. He says, the dust returns to the earth from where it came, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. There's the end of it right there. Okay? This man was trying to make some big production out of it, you know, shooing the birds away. You can't change it. It's already over. But she slept on there from the beginning of the harvest in the spring until the fall when the rains came. And she permitted neither the birds of the air to rest on them during the day nor the beasts of the field by night. Did she save that flesh? See, what happens to me when I die, if they burn me, if they kick me in a ditch, put me in a food processor and feed me to the fish, I could care less. It makes no difference to me. Does it make any difference to you? You can't preserve it. I don't care. You might preserve it for a little while, but it's still going to eventually turn to dust. Even your mummies, you see, they find eventually, they start falling to dust eventually, don't they? Yeah, that's all. Won't mean anything. There's no life in it, so it doesn't make any difference what form it takes. It was told to David that Rizpah, the daughter of Ai, the concubine of Saul, had done. And David went and took the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan, his son, from the men of Jabesh-Gilead. And Jabesh-Gilead means dry and rocky place. And it's 6 miles beyond Jordan. Wonder how that fits in. 6 miles. You're the end of your flesh, the end of the man before you get there. You got to die to come to the end of it. Which had stolen them from the streets, and there is no such thing as streets in here. The word is plaza. It's the center place. It's the center of the city. They stole them where they had them hanging up in Bethshan, the house of ease. And that's where bones are at, the place of ease and comfort, where the Philistines had hanged them. Now, this word hanged is not the same as the word hanged over on the other side where we just talked about, where they hung them up and they fell to the ground by rotting. This word means they were suspended. They were hung up suspended. And the Philistines, when they had slain Saul in Gilboa. What do you think Gilboa means? A swollen heap, just a big mass. Huh? Just emotions and flesh, and that's all it is a big mess. And he brought up from thence the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan his son, and they gathered the bones of them that were hanged. Okay? And that's the same as, that's the, talking about the ones that were hung up and dropped by rotting and everything. So the two words hanged right there in the 13th, 12th and 13th verses are two different words. Sure, of the old order. And that's the typical thing of the natural man until he has come to total perfection. He still tries to hold on to the past. And let the past go. It's gone. Just like he taught them in the passage where they traveled through the desert, and every day they had to go out and get new manna. You can't live by the manna from yesterday. You got to get a new one today. You can't listen to what they did back then and say, that's the way we got to live. That's not the answer. The answer is, what has God got for your life today? And the only way you're going to find out is open up the book that's written in your heart and find out what God has written in your heart for you today. See, I can't tell you what that is. Only you can experience what God has written for you. What He's written for me, you can't experience. If you try to experience what I've got to do, you're going to miss your life. If you try to follow what Dave does, all you're going to do is live Dave's life and you'll never know what your life was about. You've got to live your life the way God has intended you to live it. Don't come trying to follow me to be just like me, because I'm supposed to be me. You're supposed to be you. Okay? And the bones of Saul and Jonathan, his son, buried they in the country of Benjamin, that's the son of the right hand, in Zelah. What's Zelah mean? It means the rib. What would a rib mean to you? It's talking about Adam and Eve, clear back into Adam, see? In the land of the dust and the sand. In the sepulcher of Kish, which is a covenant. There was a covenant back there, in the old covenant, that's where they buried them. And they performed all that the king commanded, and after that, God was what? God wasn't entreated for the land, it said they prayed to God for the land. Now, do you think they're really praying for the dirt out there? What is the prayer for? God, you don't need to pray to God to protect that dirt out there. That dirt's in a cycle. It's going to continue on. We are the dirt. It should be for the people of Israel, people of the land. Moreover, the Philistines had yet another war. Everybody thinks it's over. They come to the first days of barley harvest, and guess what they think? It's all over. He said there's still another war, didn't he? And David went down his servants with them and fought against the Philistines. And David, what? He drew faint. You know what I see there? I could see the cross in that. When Jesus was preparing for the cross. Remember, he sweat great drops of blood from the stress on him? And Ishbi-benob, which was of the sons of the giant, the weight of whose spear weighed 300 shekels of brass in weight, he being girded with a new sword, sought to have slain David. Now, what does the word Ishbi-benob mean? His dwelling is in Nob, and Nob equals a discourse or a prophecy or a high place, or the fruit of the high place. Okay. But it was religion he's talking about here. Okay? Ishbi-benob speaks of this new creature, this new creation. Remember it talked about in Revelation, it's talked about a goat or a sheep that had horns on his head, two horns on his head. He spoke like a sheep, but he had two horns on his head. Speaking of duality, you remember that? In Revelation 13, or I know, take scratch that, and I can't remember exactly where it's at. But it's in there. where am I at again? 16. So Ishbi-Benob speaks of this religious giant, and guess where this giant's created? It's in your mind. When man starts adding to or taking away from what God said, it creates that religious giant in your mind. Ish, man. See? It's man's thinking that's put in there. That's that religious giant. And his spear weighed 300 shekels of brass. That's about 9.5 to 12.5 pounds, somewhere in that area. But he weighed 300 pounds. See? Religion has enough war in all their thinking processes to kill you. They're always carrying a weapon. And you know that what that weapon is? Their tongue. That's the spear that they kill people with. I think James said they were set on fire of hell, didn't he? And being girded with a new what? A new sword. You know what that new sword is? That sharp tongue. And you tell me what religion does to people. They get that sharp tongue. They get mad all the time. Sons of God, you don't see sons of God getting angry, do you? Sons of God should never be angry. You have an understanding. You know better. You expect little children to have problems, but adults should not, full-grown sons of God, should not have these problems. I'm just exposing things we need to talk about. We need to be able to control our emotions and not be blowing up every time something doesn't go our way. Huh? And he, being girded with a new sword, thought to have slain him. He had a desire to kill David. Well, you know what? Most churches today say they worship Christ, but truly they're trying to kill him. Every doctrine they teach is anti-Christ. It's about you doing everything for yourself. You don't need anything but this or that, what they got. You know what? You need God. If you don't have God, you're not going to make it. But see, I know something. God's in all humanity. And I know people don't like to hear it, but I'm going to tell you anyway. God's in all humanity. And whether they're working in a positive aspect or a negative aspect, that is not my call or your call. Our call is to do what Father tells us to do. He didn't tell us to be a sheriff. He didn't tell us to be a detective and search out who's doing what. He told you to live your life the way I tell you to live it. And see, I can't listen to somebody else and tell me how to live my life. I got to listen to my Father, my Master, not some human piece of flesh that He put in a body here, and He gave them a direction. Now they're trying to tell me how to live my life. Can't do it, can they? You got to do it yourself. I think he said you had to work out your own deliverance, didn't he? But Abishai, and that is the gift of the Father, the son of Zeruiah, that's the balsam or the healing salve, succored him or aided him and smote the Philistine and killed him. Then the men of David swore to him, saying, "You shall no more go out with us to battle, that you quench not or extinguish not the light of Israel." So what are they saying? What's that verse telling you about the gospel? David killed the giant. Remember what it said in 1 Chronicles 11, verse 4? It said, "The first one to slay the Jebusite will become chief and captain." Didn't he? You know what he just killed there? I just told you what Ishbi-Benob was. Religion. There's the Jebusite he's killing. You see what I'm saying? So when you kill that, guess what? No longer, once the Jebusite is killed, it's already been taken care of, he said, no longer would David go out to do battle with him. You know what that's telling me? The first fruit's taken over. All right, now we've had the crucifixion. We've dealt with this giant in the land, haven't we? This religious giant. Now we can take over the land. But we're not there yet. Are we? There's still some more wars to go on down here. There's still some more wars. 1 Chronicles 11, 4. I said that. Now let me look and see if I told you the truth. 1 Chronicles 11:4. I said it right. Okay. And it came to pass after this that there was again a battle with the Philistines in Gob. The dust mites are not laid down yet, are they? The ites in the land, are still some there. And this word Gob, what does it mean? Cistern or P-I-T, pit. Here's where the battle is. It's in the pit. Just because you overcome the first giant doesn't mean you have the land cleaned up yet, does it? And that's what he's trying to tell you. You've got to go through this. He that endures until the end, the same shall be delivered. Jesus said it in Matthew 10, verse 22. He said it in Matthew 24, 13. And he said it in Mark 13, 13. He that endures to the end, the same shall be, or this one shall be delivered. Well, that tells me if they don't endure to the end, they're not going to be totally delivered in this life, are they? They'll get taken care of later on, but they're not going to be totally delivered now. It's talking about full-grown sons of God. You want to be a full-grown son of God, you've got to be delivered from your thinking process. And it's not a one-time deal. It's a lifetime of it. So anyway, there was another battle with Philistines in Gob. Then Sibchai, that's a good, thank you. Say something, sounds good. You know what that means? To contend with difficulty and act to overcome them. The Hushite slew Saph, which was of the sons of John. Now here comes another battle, and this guy, Sibchai, or some whatever his name is, that means to contend with difficulty and act to overcome them. So here's a man that comes up, here's a thought comes up in your mind, we need to be that word I can't hardly pronounce. We need to be that sin, whatever it is. Sibchai, the Hushite. We need to be that, see? To kill Saph, which is the son of the giant. You know what Saph means? Tall, big. You think it's big in your mind. Your mind's real good about creating illusion. You know what I mean? Images pop up in your mind. Something great. I can't do it. How many times, Ed, has that thing popped up in your head? I can't quit. Not true, though, is it? Not true. See? That's slaying a giant in your land, in your thinking, when it says, I can't do it. See? Everybody has giants in your land, and when you think you can't do it, and when you think you see those great big grapes in that promised land, but you say there's giants in the land, I'm going to say this. Amen, there's giants in the land. But it didn't mean, see, Joshua and Caleb, when they saw the land, they saw the same giants that you see. They saw the same giants that the other 10 men saw. But their view of it was what was different. They saw the same picture, great big grapes and giants. And you know what they said? That's all right, our Lord can take care of them too. If he produced those grapes, man, he can take care of them. And the other 10 said, no, there's big grapes, but man, look at the giants. We're just grasshoppers in their sight. See, it's the view you got in your mind. If you come out of this view of how pitiful we are, we can't do anything, you know what you'll be? You'll be like the 10. And they died in the desert, didn't they? And that experience that they took in the desert and they dropped for generations of people died. But you know why they died? Because they didn't believe. And they died in their testing, so it wasn't the journey that got them there. You know, they didn't get to their destination, did they? Because the journey overtook them. They didn't overcome the situation. And what does his name mean? Contend with difficulty and act to overcome it. That's what that word means. Look at verse 19. They just got through killing a giant, and look what happens. There was again a battle in Gob with the Philistines, where Elhanan, the son of Jairahim, the Bethlehemite, slew the brother of Goliath the Gittite. Man, he just killed a giant, and here's another giant popped right up in your face again. And that's exactly where it's at, in your face, in your thinking process. So he was in the mine. There was another battle in the mine. And the Philistines were with the Philistines, where Elhanah, which is God is gracious, the son of Jehoiakim, the woods of the weaver, a Bethlehemite, that's he slew the brother of Goliath. Goliath is an exile. The Gittite, or that's someone who lives in Gath, whose staff was like a spear, was like a weaver's beam. But now, Goliath was a Gittite. He lived in Gath, correct? Gath is what? Wine press. Where is the wine press? It's in here. So whenever your lifestyle of walking this thing out, you stir up these giants in your land. Do you hear what I'm saying? When you walk this course that God gives you, you stir up the giant in your land, and it's always in the wine press. So in this process of stirring things up and producing the flow out, which is what? What flows out of the wine press? Wine, the revelation of God. That's what comes out of all these tests. But what stays in the wine press? The flesh. Hello. See, the giant didn't come out of Gath. He died in Gath. He died in the wine press. I think that's really neat. That's neat. He dies in the wine press. And looky here. Verse 20. Good God, there's another battle. Here we thought we overcome the giant, and whap, there's another one. Verse 19. Verse 20, boom, there's another one. 18, 19, 20. Man, it's just constant battle, battle, battle. But the main thing is, God has provided a way. The gift of God is to take care of that thing, isn't it? And there was yet a battle in Gath. And there was a man of great stature who had on every hand 6 fingers and 6 toes. And on every foot 6 toes, 24 in number. And he was also born of the giant. Well, you know what? 4 times 6 is what? Do you know what the number 24 is? It's a witness of completeness. It's a complete man. This is a complete Adam man. This is an all-natural man. He had 6 in his lifestyle, and he had six in his works, his hands. His hands and feet were all 6, all human. This is the totality of man. This is the giant that I want to see faced. That's the giant that you need to see faced. You need to face this one face to face. And when you come to this one, baby, you've come to something. And when he defiled Israel, the rule of God, Jonathan, and what is Jonathan? God-given. The son of Shimeiah, the renowned, the brother of David, slew him. And the brother of David, you know who the brother of David was? Christ. Jesus was the brother of David. He was the brother of David and the son of David. Confusing to the religious mind, I know that. Huh? Yep. And when he defiled him, he said, this man, Shimei, the brother of Jonathan, the son of Shimei, the brother slew him. So what does Jonathan mean? The God's gift was to kill him, right? And these 4 were born to the giant where? In the wine press. You know what happens in a wine press? There's all kinds of pressures. There's all kinds of things going on in your life. And here's the wine press between her ears. And all these pressures of life keep pressing and pressing and pressing. But thank God that the thing that comes out of the wine press is the wine, the revelation of God in your life. But guess what? The flesh stays in the wine press. If you're not in the wine press, you'll never be separated from the giant. You'll believe the lie or you're going to believe the truth. You get in the wine press, you'll be separated from the giants. And the 4 were born to the giant in the wine press and fell by the hand of David. They fell by the works of Christ, the cross. You can't get away from the cross wherever you are. What was the work of Christ? The cross. You can't get away from that. That death by the cross is what took care of the 4 giants. It was finished. Why is it 4? It's the complete natural thinking of man. It's done away with by the crucifixion. When he went through the crucifixion in Romans 6, it says, when he died, you died with him. Correct? And when he resurrected, you resurrected with him. Correct? So guess what? What do you got to worry about? Oh, yes. It was God's choice. Absolutely. But they fell by the hand of David. And don't forget this last little portion of this verse now. And the works of his first fruit. They didn't fall just by him. He was the pattern. He was the first. He showed you how to do it. Now we got to do the same thing he did. Hello? That's the first fruit. Correct? Didn't he tell his disciples, you'll do greater works than I? You'll do greater works than what I've done? What do you think he's talking about? He's talking about, you're going to kill more giants than I did. I just come and set the pattern for you. Now you're going to deliver the rest of creation. See, this is something going on in you. And until you have to come to this understanding that you are delivered, that you're the Son of God, you're this first fruit. And until you get delivered, you can't deliver anybody else. And there's nothing any more sickening to me than these people that stand up and try to tell people how to live their lives, and their life is in shambles. Their life's in the toilet. And the only thing you could do for their life is go and flush it. That's where theirs is at. They're trying to tell you how to live your life, and they're saying, don't do what I do, do what I say. It's sickening. If you're going to stand up and preach it, you better live it. Jesus lived it, and he preached it. There's no way to separate that, the experience with the words. If you can't experience it, and you don't experience it, you've got no right preaching it, because it's just words to you. Until it becomes a reality in your heart, you've got no right of saying anything. You're just babbling, bumping your gums, putting air out here in the end of the universe, just noises, right? That's all it is. And it makes me sick to hear people try to tell people how to live their lives and they can't even get their own out of the gutter. Done. Any questions or rocks to throw or anything, comments?